Oh, hi there. Just putting a little time on the treadmill. Nope, not the exercise treadmill, the upgrade treadmill. You know, the endless cycle of trading in your electronics for the latest model. You get that bright, shiny new thing, and then after a while, it slows down because there's a new operating system, or the screen gets cracked, or maybe you just want the new thing. With Google's new Pixel phone out this past week and a new iPhone around the corner, we thought it was worth looking into the cost of upgrade culture on today's show. Something we've talked about before on Spark, way back in 2009, we profiled a project to get tech types to hold on to their devices for one more year. Tech entrepreneur and activist Anil Dash talked about the strange standards of newness we apply to tech.
I think it's egregious that the iPod is so fragile and you're supposed to be so reverent towards it, and that it has a secondary market of people buying cases so that you can treat it like it's a Fabergé egg. You know, I'm like, this thing is rock and roll, right? Like, rock and roll is denim and leather. It means it wears in and it breaks down, and that's what makes it yours. Like, I don't want a fresh, shiny new pair of jeans. You know, I love music and I look at guitars. Guitars are worth more when they're older and somebody's played them and you know, they've got some mileage on them.
So great, let's hold on to our stuff longer. Come to know and love it and fix it in true geek fashion. Except that often, device makers discourage us from fixing our stuff. This is especially true now that it's not just cell phones and computers that come embedded with software. All sorts of formerly standalone stuff is now tied to software upgrades, as author Aaron Perzanowski explained earlier this season.
It's just a few years back when a company called Nest, which is owned by Google, decided that a home automation hub that they sold, a product called the Revolve, was a product they were no longer interested in making and no longer interested in supporting. And they sent out a message to the owners of these devices that on a certain date in the future, they simply wouldn't work anymore. The company simply expected consumers to deal with this inconvenience, right? This product that they bought for $300 or so was essentially turned into an expensive paperweight.
Back in 2013, Kyle Weens, founder of the online repair manual iFixit, argued that even the aesthetics of our devices can hinder their repairability.
There's also a trend toward what I like to call design anorexia, where as consumers, we want thinner and thinner products at all costs. Mm-hmm. And we don't always realize that the cost can be either thinner glass, so it's easier to break the glass when you make a thinner product. It's also a little bit easier to make a product thin if you glue it together rather than using screws or clips that can be easy to replace. So right. We're a little bit concerned about the trend that we're seeing in the industry, and we're a little bit frustrated with companies in terms of the direction they're going, but we also think that the choices that we're making as consumers are also leading manufacturers down a path of thinner and thinner at all costs.
So all that, plus the sheer consumerism and marketing hype, means that we're less likely to hold on to our devices. But of course, all that comes with a cost. And I'm not just talking about our wallets.
How our electronics are made and unmade is dirty and dangerous. It's a global story of damaged lives, environmental destruction, and devices that are designed to die.
It's a little bit of the documentary Death by Design, and the voice you're hearing is filmmaker Sue Williams. The doc is a look at the cost to the environment, to the health and safety of workers, of the way we produce our digital devices. I started by asking Sue what got her interested in the subject.
I've been working in China for many years. I've made 6 films there already, and over a period of about 30 years almost. So I've seen the environment change in China, I mean, dramatically. A friend of mine introduced me to Ma Jun, who's China's leading environmental activist. And what he discovered through his work, he took published government data on pollution violations across the country, built this huge database with hundreds of thousands of entries. And as they began crunching the data, he found that a really large percentage of the violations were issued to electronics companies. And he was really surprised by that because he thought that the electronics industry was a clean industry. Of course, what he learned was that it's really a toxic chemical handling industry.
I mean, I think many of us have a sense that there are environmental and workplace health consequences to, you know, our culture of upgrades and how our devices are produced and disposed of. But we might not know the scale of it. Can you paint a bit of a picture for me in terms of, you know, just the amount of production and the raw materials and the toxic chemicals involved?
Yeah, in the film, we didn't do rare earth minerals. We didn't go that far back in the supply chain. We really focused on the factories making the circuit boards and the chips. When the industry was based here in the U.S., in Silicon Valley and in upstate New York as well. Well, one example is trichloroethylene. It's a solvent, and they would use it in the manufacturing process, and they would store it in underground tanks. And, of course, solvents are really good at dissolving things. Mm-hmm. So the trichloroethylene would leak out into the soil and plume its way, make its way through the soil into the groundwater. As a result, just in Silicon Valley in Santa Clara County, they have more Superfund sites there than any other county in the country. A Superfund site is a site that the federal government has ordered to clean up because the environmental damage is so devastating. And these sites are going to take hundreds of years to clean up. So that's just in America in the early days of the industry. When it moved to China, there are very few environmental regulations, especially up until fairly recently. So it was great for the electronics companies. They could go there. They could get tons of cheap workers. You know, the numbers are just, you know, hundreds of thousands of gallons by multiple factories every year going straight into rivers, into the ocean. Apparently, as what I've been hearing recently is that, as in southern China's environmental regulation gets a little better enforced, mm-hmm. companies are moving to the coast because they can just release all their waste into the ocean. So it's kind of hard to imagine the scale of it. If you imagine Foxconn, which has over 1 million employees, we're talking plants in the supply chain, which are, you know, hundreds of thousands of workers. So just multiply that by all the manufacturers and all the suppliers, you know, who are making things, chips from the smallest of our devices to, you know, tens of thousands of devices.
Mm-hmm. You know, several years ago, there was a lot of discussion about some of the workplace health and safety conditions in other parts of the world, most notably China. Can you talk a bit about some of the workplace impacts you found?
Yeah, I think like many journalists, we focused in on Foxconn because they're the largest private employer in China, and they make products for everybody, but most famously or infamously for Apple. The size of the Foxconn factory, you drive for blocks. It's just huge. Mm. So it's very impersonal. The workers work very long shifts to make everything work. To make 10 million iPhones in 3 weeks, you need a very kind of militaristic workforce style. So they work long shifts, short breaks. They never really make friends because with other workers because they live in dorms and they're on different shifts. There's kind of an intentional creation of an isolating work experience. So for a lot of the kids who work there, who were mostly straight out of high school, maybe they're 17, and there's a lot of, they use a lot of interns, it's quote-unquote interns as well. So, you know, working in such a vast, impersonal place can be devastatingly lonely and hard, just really hard. So there was a spate of suicides a few years ago. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just saw from China Labor Watch that there's been a couple more suicides recently and there are strikes at another factory. So there was a spate of suicides where workers were jumping off the roof. And Foxconn's response to it at the time was to put up safety nets so that you couldn't kill yourself. And then workers were made to sign affidavits saying that if they did try to kill themselves or succeeded in killing themselves, their families wouldn't get any sort of financial remuneration for the loss of their child.
Right. Did you have a sense that we could fix this problem, that there would be methods of production that don't involve polluting the environment or workplace health and safety, or is this inherent in the manufacture of these devices?
I think it's a question of will. You know, the bottom line for Apple, the richest corporation in history, is bottom line for its investors and shareholders. They really, you know, they talk a very good talk in their corporate social responsibility, that they have green offices and green shops and they're, you know, powered by eco-friendly energy. It's a lot harder to do it in the supply chain. However, there's one example which I always use, which is when the European Union banned lead mm-hmm. in all products going into the EU a number of years ago, lead was the best conductor in microchips and circuit boards. And everyone said, you can't replace lead, you can't replace lead. Well, the minute that the EU banned lead in anything going into the common market, Apple and the other companies did figure out a way to replace lead because they didn't want to lose that market. So I think it's a question of will. I think it's a question of public awareness, of pressure on the brands. You know, if you step back a little bit and you think about this technology, it's all incredibly new. I mean, the iPhone's 10 years old and that's transformed the planet, mm-hmm. right? We've been so excited about what we can do and the endless possibilities of all this new technology that it's been hard to sort of step back and say, but how are these things made and what is the impact? You know, we're so in love with Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg and all these sort of huge giants, geniuses of our time that it's hard to step back and say, let's take a look. But I think more and more people are, and small companies are starting to make, you know, there's Fairphone in Europe, mm-hmm. which is, you know, doing great work. There's iFixit, who we talk about in the film, who have figured out a way to earn the European Union flower of environmental responsibility for their manufacturing methods. So we have to demand it. And I think they're really smart people at these companies like Apple. They should be able to figure it out.
What kind of responsibility do we as individuals have? I mean, how would you like someone who's seen your film to think about their devices and to think about how long we keep our devices?
I hope that people who see the film will think twice, if not three or four times, about whether they upgrade. So when Apple 10 comes out in a few weeks, is really that little microprocessor bump, that little increase, minuscule increase in speed, really worth upgrading for? Don't upgrade just because the ads are sexy and you think it's a status symbol to have the latest phone. I kept my iPhone 4. I had my iPhone 4 most of the time I was making the film. And then eventually some of the letters on the keyboard stopped working and I couldn't make an S, which was difficult given that my name's Sue. So I couldn't, you know, I couldn't. So at that point, you know, I went and got a new phone and I bought the best one that I could so that it will last for a long time. And I do consciously try to take care of it.
Sue, thanks so much. It's a fascinating and disturbing film. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Sue Williams is a filmmaker based in New York City. Death by Design appeared at this year's Planet in Focus Film Festival in Toronto. And if you are upgrading a device, we have a link to resources for safely disposing of your old one. That's at our website, cbc.ca/spark.